Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And despite no rugby, despite lockdown, despite isolation, we are back again with another podcast from our respective TMO shipping containers. I'm Tim. I can see JB there looking like some kind of Game of Thrones on a wolf rug.
It's a mixture, isn't it? We've seen Game of Thrones and Babe Station.
And there is Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Looks like you're wearing some French stash. Oh, you are. You are. Oh, that's a lovely jersey. That's a lovely jersey.
This is just a training top. About 2012, 2014, that kind of era.
That is beautiful. Have you two been, clapping your wives as they arrive home from hospital and they're clapping them off when they go off to their shift?
So funnily enough, right, a good friend of mine, CJ, friend of the pod, actually, was saying, as a joke, that he was going to go running he's going to time his run so he could go out running and return back to his house at 8 o'clock so he could get clapped in on the home straight. I completely forgot about that, but I was running as they started clapping, and it felt good.
Well done, JB. Well done.
Well done. Tell a joke at 7:59 out your window. How are they finding it? How are your anaesthetist wives finding it all?
A bit more serious this week, I think.
Yeah, it's getting more serious. The good news is there's still plenty of capacity in the hospital that Claire's working at. Long may that continue, and they're well staffed and well equipped at the moment.
It's unbelievable the operation they've done, the logistical work that's been done, and the speed that it's happened at. It's phenomenal.
Dude, I was reading today about the ventilators and how Mercedes had basically just built this ventilator from nothing. Well, it's not even a ventilator. You know, for those of you that are actually interested, it's a CPAP machine. The reason that they went for that, because they were whinging, the standard of the ventilators won't be this, that, or the other. But the reason they went for the CPAP machines is because they can be administered by people who are not trained anaesthetists. You don't need to intubate someone. It doesn't leave potential scarring on the lungs. And they can build 1,000 a day. And they did all this in like 10 days or something. It's just incredible.
Yeah, the news of that stuff is incredible. The hospitals, NHS Nightingale, and those, they are seriously, seriously impressive facilities that have been built in unbelievable timescales.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so weird that there are some people among us who are so reticent to give any sort of pat on the back or well done or praise that they've started going to social media and arguing about whether that hospital's technically been built or not.
There'll always be someone not happy, Tim. There'll always be someone.
I know. Well, I mean, the one thing I've really enjoyed over this period is celebrities realising how irrelevant they are and desperately clamouring for attention. People like
except for you, Tim, because you're still entertaining the nation.
Of course.
The proper frontline worker.
Every afternoon on Virgin Radio, 1 till 4, from this TMO shipping container. But Kate Winslet, for example, for some reason, she starred in a movie called Contagion, Once Upon a Time, and died. And her character died. And that gives her the authority to tell us how to wash our hands. So I just want to say on that basis, I'm looking forward to Michael J. Fox with his time travel tips. And Gene Wilder on how to run a successful chocolate factory.
I tell you who does need a shout out. Not to the same degree as everyone else, so don't anyone get all upset. But the people who need a shout out are the people battling and trying to run rugby union social media accounts for the Premiership clubs. There's no rugby on, and yet they seem to pump out content day in, day out. They're the most ingenious people on social media. How do you do it?
What's the best stuff that you've seen in terms of not just the club's social media, but players' social media?
I think Jamal Ford Robinson.
Yes. Jamal Ford Robinson, Gloucester prop, is killing it.
Tell you what, though, there are worse things to do than get on the right side of your club CEO.
Yeah, to generate some goodwill, some good branding for your for the CEO, for the club.
Yeah, I think
that's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, Lance Bradley's an influential man. I would certainly carry on posting if he was liking my posts.
If you haven't seen Jamal Ford Robinson, if you haven't seen what Jamal Ford Robinson's been doing, for quite a long time he's been streaming his gaming on Twitch, and he's got a bit of a following there, but he's just...
Yeah, check it out.
He's embracing the cabin fever and just, you know, yeah, I'll post a picture of myself on the loo. I'll do a weird dance in my living room. No worries. I quite like it.
Did you see the one today which is going around, the TikTok of someone picking that isolation character?
Yes, I did see
Bloody
that.
Bloody brilliant.
Good. That's clever.
Very, very good. And the other one...
Explain that to me. I didn't see that.
It's very hard for me to explain. Maybe Phil would do a better job.
So imagine you're picking a computer game character, so like a Street Fighter character, and it had a video of a woman just like in the character selection screen. So she's just kind of like gently moving, and then every second and a half, she flips outfit or flips object that she's holding.
It's very good.
Oh, very
I'll send
good.
You a link.
And the other one which I've really enjoyed is, have you seen those death memes going about?
The African funeral.
Yeah, the African funeral party. is one of the funniest things. Like, it is so inappropriate, and the more you watch, the funnier they get. It's like a compounding effect. Like, you watch one, and you go, "What on earth is this? This is stupid." And then the second one, you kind of get it. So the idea is, someone does something, and inevitably will die, like falls into the sea full of sharks. And the funniest ones are the guys that definitely deserve to die. So there's one guy putting his head in an alligator's mouth, and obviously the alligator goes all alligator on him. Hilarious.
But it's the combination.
It's the music.
It's the music and the videos of the guys.
The suspense.
The guys like dancing, carrying the coffin.
Brilliant.
Well, I would give a tip to anyone that has to go out to pick up essential supplies, and obviously only go out when you're picking up essential supplies. Some rugby training you can do is your footwork, if you go to a supermarket, will be immense, because it's like playing a life-size version of Pac-Man, going up and down the aisles, just avoiding people.
Yeah.
And because of
social distancing, the defence is perfectly spaced.
Exactly. In fact, that's going to be a new analogy you can use when you're coaching at TOC HJB. Social distance.
Social distance! Social distance!
Add it to line speed and Wolves.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's been a few bits and pieces going on, I guess.
Yeah, well, firstly, I got an email today of a calendar reminder of my flight that was down to Exeter, which was meant to be happening, over this weekend, a couple of days ago, which reminded me we would have been on European Cup quarterfinals this weekend.
Wow. Yeah, I got my weekends wrong. So I thought today was the day that Sale Sharks became top of the league. It wasn't. Last week is when Byron McGuigan scored a hat-trick of tries, and then Langdon got the bonus point when Sale beat Exeter last week, which didn't happen. But that's what would have happened.
Is that what you dreamt?
No, that's what would have happened. That's a fact. That's a fact. So that's a shame that we don't get to see that, but we know it would have happened. So, you know.
And we would have had Byron on the podcast. We would have had Byron on the podcast to celebrate that fact. Well, him and you celebrate.
Well, and all neutrals.
And all neutrals together.
All neutrals would be happy with that result.
It does kind of hit home, though, knowing that this would have been European Cup quarterfinal weekend. Because that is such an exciting weekend.
It is.
The eight games, but the four big ones, which are always spicy. That's so annoying.
Isn't it just? Well, relegation...
Oh, no, no, go on. You want to jump in? I was going to say, where do you want to start? The relegation has been confirmed, and promotions up and down the leagues have been confirmed.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite sad, isn't it, that obviously it's not all to do with how teams performed on the field. Well, actually, it is. It is all to do with how teams performed on the field. But we'll never know what the remaining games would have been. I'm quite happy with it. I'm quite happy with with how they worked out and the calculations that they used.
Yeah. Exceptional circumstances lead to exceptional action. It's not ideal, exactly as you've said, but I think this is the best solution. I think it's interesting the formula they did use. So they weighted home and away games differently. Now, when I was thinking about how you do this, you could do something much more complicated to weight the quality of your opposition as well. But that, I think that has, it becomes too subjective.
Yeah.
Because you'd argue, what time of year are you playing the opposition? What kind of injuries have they got? All that kind of stuff that would have tiny little impacts. So I'm quite happy with the home and away waiting, because
it's
that
easy
is probably,
to understand, isn't it?
And it's probably, in my mind, is probably the single biggest determinant of the points that you will, the league points that you will get out of a game, whether you're playing home or away.
I also think that in terms of the calculations used, the more basic the better, because you know, if you really went to the nth degree on this and complicated it too much, there'd be all sorts of arguing about assumptions used and whatnot. So yeah, I'm more than happy with it.
Yeah.
In football, they have a polls. I seem to remember them having a polls panel. Is that still a thing? Where if there was a postponed game for the purpose of the polls betting thing, polls coupon. I don't know how that works. You guess score draws and goalless draws and things like that. Anyway, but on the basis of that, they had a panel of people who they delegated that, you know, deciding what the result would have been to. Because I always remember on the old BBC, you know, the old grandstand, when they used to do the full-time scores, they'd go, they'd sort of go home win or away win when it was a postponed match.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So I never understood how the pools worked. I might have to look that up. That is one of my childhood questions, which I never really got.
Yeah, I remember seeing it on, grandstand final score, but
isn't it weird that the BBC, particularly back in the day when gambling wasn't as big as it is now, basically gave out gambling results?
Yeah. Well, they do the lottery.
That is true.
And maybe there are some rugby unions and rugby clubs who, you know, just think, oh, do you know what? Let's take what we got and put it on red or black in a casino. To double or quits, because there's some people in some bad ways. The latest being, well, Rugby Australia, it looks like there's a lot of politics and a lot of kicking off down there, and a lot of people very concerned. Apparently, 15 former Wallaby captains are saying that big changes need to happen at Rugby Australia, and probably Raylene Castle needs to go. The only one who's spoken out publicly so far is Nick Farr-Jones.
Yeah, I have a tremendous amount of sympathy for Raylene Castle, to be honest. But I do understand where this is going. I think it's possible that you can be a very good administrator, which I probably think she is. The answer is I don't know. I don't know enough about her to say if she's a good enough administrator or not. But what I can say is people have polarised around her, and this is not her fault whatsoever. It feels that people defending her will say one of two things, which I think are maddening. One is everyone's attacking it as a misogynist, and number two is it's part of a Fox Sport conspiracy. Now, if you think I'm joking, I'm really not. These are the two things which come up over and over again. You're a misogynist, or you're acting in such bad faith. And to what end would the people on Fox Sport really want her gone? I mean, I don't understand why every analyst and every commentator who's even remotely linked to Fox just wants her gone because, again, they're misogynists. The point I'm trying to make on this is, how on earth do you come to a consensus as a rugby community if you think the person you're arguing with doesn't actually have any points or anything interesting to say? they're just doing it out of bad faith. And it's really worrying because you can see the two sides polarizing and they just don't want to talk to each other. So this Ronin Castle thing, I think she's going to go because the pressure's building and building and building. And I don't think they're going to get any further forward. I think they're going to eat. I think the two sides will eat themselves.
And it is worth saying exactly on that point that when she took over in 2017, Rugby Australia was not exactly in the rudest health.
No.
It still is not exactly in the rudest health. Before the coronavirus position, it was not in rudest health. I don't know if it's got any worse, in all honesty.
Yes. We've also lost a Fox Sports deal.
Okay.
So the Fox Sports deal was, I mean, I think they've been their partner since time began, really. And everyone's fallen out and whatnot. And now Fox do not sponsor the AOE, or sorry, have not bought their rights.
Right.
Which is really, really troubling. So, you know, again, depending on who you listen to, this is great because they're freed from the Fox deal and they can go out and get another sponsor. But personally, I don't think it works like that. And in today's climate, you probably wouldn't be banking on finding another sponsor of that size anytime soon.
No, and Rugby Australia has been declining in strength. Rugby Union in Australia has been declining in popularity for quite a long time.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know what the shame of it is? I remember growing up watching Super Rugby when it was only, was it Super 12s or Super 15s at the time? I think it was Super 15 at the time. And I honestly thought that the Australian game, in fact, all the Super Rugby games, and this could just be rose-tinted glasses, was far ahead of the Southern Hemisphere, of the Northern Hemisphere games. Even the stadiums, I mean, they weren't massive, but they were bigger than ours. It felt more like an event. The product was absolutely brilliant. And it's just declined since then.
It is incredible to think, like, when I remember watching Super Rugby in the early, mid 2000s, it seemed like it was ahead of the curve.
Didn't it?
You watched that compared to the Northern Hemisphere game, and it was always, I don't know, it seemed more futuristic and just more advanced, more professional.
Yeah, and there's probably a lesson here to be learned for Super League too. Super League have done the same thing, is they just keep on tinkering with their format. I mean, some of the formats that Super League and Super Rugby have had are mind-blowingly stupid. Mind-blowingly. Like, three pools with different amounts of teams in. You know, we did a gag about 4 years ago about how complex the Rugby League playoff system is. The more complex things are, people just don't care. They just want a league. And when it's Super 15, everyone understood it. Simple. I think it's Super 12. When
Super 12s, yeah.
Was it Super 10s before that?
It was, God, we did cover it, I looked into it a little while ago. It started in the mid-90s.
Yeah, three Australian teams, five New Zealand teams, and then five
South
Africans. That'd be Super 13, four South African teams.
Four South African, yeah.
Yeah, that's how I remember it.
Well, with the Australian situation being as it is, and with it looking like South Africa are going to do one in a couple of years, maybe after the next World Cup, then the outlook isn't great. Which kind of leads me on to this, because we can sort of tie in the USA at this point. And exactly what is the situation there? Major League Rugby effectively gone bust, has it? Or is it USA Rugby gone bust, but Major League Rugby still there?
So it is USA Rugby. So it's the governing body, the equivalent of the RFU or WRU or Rugby Australia. And they have filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which, as I understand it, is more similar to administration, if you know anything about English accountancy and corporations, which is not... So Chapter 7 would be they're done. They basically liquidate, whereas Chapter 11 is more like administration. So they are given a period of time to reorganize, restructure... Right. Their organization and importantly restructure their debts to their debtors and money that they owed from their creditors. So we'll see how it goes. It might not be the end. Hopefully it's not the end, but it's a very serious position and it's a very worrying sign for what for a long period of time people have looked at as one of the great potential powers of world rugby. There's such an enormous market who are tuned into contact sport. There's a lot of money. There is we've all been there multiple times. When you go to the USA to watch rugby, there is this incredibly passionate fan base who really, really love the game. and it's growing. It's tying all those things together to grow the game. And so far, they've teetered on the edge a little bit, but never really managed to progress it. And this can only, in my mind, be a potential backward step from where they've got to.
Agreed.
Completely agree. I suppose we should say go to our friends on the American Rugby Pod. What's the current name of it? The Warren.
Yeah.
And Warren and Preston have been covering it as long as we've been doing our podcast. We've had many a session with them in America. So yeah, they'll have the very latest on the USA situation. I will give that a listen this week to see what's going on. But there's some talk about, for various unions, Australia, USA, and any others that might need some help, is there any obligation or duty of World Rugby to quote unquote bail out any union?
No, I don't think there is. I mean, you know, particularly the bigger unions, the answer is just no. I don't even think that they should get state aid, quite frankly, outside of the aid which has already been promised. I mean, we've got real things to pay for, like airlines and, you know, actual things. So no. Now, it'd be grossly unfair, wouldn't it, if World Rugby's coffers were opened up to the bigger unions rather than the smaller ones. Because that's effectively what World Rugby is really good at. It's helping out the smaller nations, and you know that's basically what it does. I would really hate it if you know, England went cap in hand. England should be able to look after themselves, even in times like this.
Yeah, and I do think England will do. I think England have got enough resources. They will make a loss, as we said last week. 45 to 50 million pounds over the next 18 months is what they're predicting. But in doing that, they are still giving back to the community game. So I wouldn't worry.
I do wonder where all this money to the community game goes. I mean, I really love the idea of them having coaches. You know, the roving coaches are great. Occasionally they show up with a scrum machine or whatnot. But I've said it before on the podcast that, you know, if you can't get your club membership out to, you know, clean the sheds and mow the lawn, what exactly is it that you're doing? So I would like to know where it's all going.
Yeah.
Well, we'll watch the financial fallout because there's a long way to go on all of this. But yeah. On a lighter note, we've got much more to talk about. We've got the law breakdowns, changes, clarifications from World Rugby. We've got Eddie Jones re-signing and various other bits and bobs. But on a lighter note, Peter Shaw, long-time listener. Thank you very much, Peter. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. You can email us, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Peter Shaw got in touch and has suggested that in this period in isolation, when one of the few pleasures you might have is sitting down with a drink of some kind and, you know, relaxing on your own, can we match rugby players with particular drinks? And he suggested for a Negroni that should be Sergio Parise.
Is it Sergio Parise, though? I mean, I get it. He's Italian.
But Sergio, you would imagine, would taste... I mean, there is a pleasure in a Negroni, but that pleasure is matched with pain.
So, a Negroni, in terms of its character, is very much Johann Uge. Sophisticated, yet horrible. I can't think of an Italian version of Johann Uge. I kind of think that, Parise needs to be something more refined, finer. I don't know what, but something.
Well, I did think this... Yeah, I'm happy to go with Uge for a Negroni instead.
If he's Italian, it'd be perfect.
It would. So suggestions on a Negroni to at Rugby Podcast, but I was hoping you might go around the houses and find this one out, but I'm going to do it. This is a joke that I'm doing purely because I think JB will appreciate it. But if you could assign a drink to your mate Stephen Jones as a bitter.
Yes, quite.
But any more for any more?
So the other one.
Oh yeah, go on.
Yeah, the other one that Peter Shaw did was bod as a delicious, lovely, smooth pint of Guinness.
Indeed, delicious.
Classy, one of the all-time greats. Perfect in almost any occasion.
Almost any weddings, funerals, bar mitzvahs.
Exactly.
And Bod's talents are that good that they would be timeless. You plonk him in a game 50 years ago or in 20 years' time, and he'll be one of those players that can across eras.
Yeah. Yes. Pod's actually remarkably good at that. He would have been the best player on the park basically any game he's played over the past 100 years if you could drop him into anyone. And in 50 years' time, he'd probably still be as good. Absolute class. Mm.
Do you wonder where the game is going to end up? Because there's been such a rapid progression. I mean, Bod wouldn't have been the best centre in the 1970s. He'd have been the best centre, prop, wing or eight in the 70s. Yeah. Like, fast forwarding 20 years on, what on earth is it that we're going to be seeing which is going to say, yeah, actually, that guy, when he played in 2000, if he played in 2010, would have been the best prop, wing, centre, you name it.
Yeah.
Although we've never repeated Andrew Sheridan. That is worth saying. So maybe we have got somewhere.
That's a good point. He would have, if you dropped him in his pomp in his 2005 to 2009 period or whenever his true pomp was, you could probably just drop that exact man onto a field tomorrow and he would be just as destructive.
Or in 20 years' time.
Or in 20 years' time. Yeah.
That's actually gone backwards. He's very much like Concorde. Like in aviation, we've gone backwards. In the world of rugby, since Andrew Sheridan, we have gone backwards. He was the Concorde of our game.
Yes.
But no, I do genuinely think Bod is... He was one of those talents, and this is what makes the real great players, is that his speed of mind was incredible.
Yeah.
And his speed meant that he could defy the lack of size that he might have had. He was still powerful because of, you know, power is speed times acceleration. No, mass times acceleration.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of the acceleration. As long as you've got a lot of the acceleration, I think you can do the any era thing.
Yeah, it's a good point though, Jay. If you drop him in the 70s, he would be the best player on the pitch in every single position.
He'd definitely be the best hooker.
Hooker and seven.
Probably prop. Probably
could be prop.
All three across the back row and any position in the back.
What would they make of George North?
Well, I do think this, like, how far would you have to go down the leagues for a professional rugby player to be able to play any position 1 through to 15. So like
me at Tok Age.
Like you at Tok Age.
Yeah.
Like if Billy Vunipola is playing level 8, he would be
he could easily play every position on our field.
Billy Vunipola, you could probably put him at level 4 or level 3 and he could play every position.
Scrum off?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, your tactic, it would become a 9-man rugby. Scrum, nine pick and go.
Yeah, instead of an 8 pick and go, it's a 9 pick and go. Not much different. I do wonder, who would be the worst player at that? If you started from the bottom, who couldn't make it up to like the second tier in every position? Someone like...
I see.
Like Dan Cole, for example.
Hands, though. He's got really good hands.
Has he?
Good at turnovers as well.
Davey Wilson.
Davey Wilson, yeah. Davey Wilson would be a good one.
Alex Cuthbert.
Well, the other way would be to go, like, if you go to level 10 or whatever, you still get big props. You still get 100-plus, 110-plus kg props.
You do.
Someone like Peter Stringer.
Peter Stringer would make mincemeat of most of those 110 kilogram props. Believe you me.
Probably he's a
I have seen some disgusting units.
I remember it was when he moved to Sale Sharks within so this would have been the June or whatever. So he was just moving across from Munster or wherever he was. No, he was somewhere in between, wasn't he? Worcester?
What, for Sale? Oh, Tim, allow me.
Bath.
He was Newcastle. Munster.
Bath.
Saracens.
Castle Saracens.
Saracens. Yeah. Anyway, then, he moved up to Sale, but within a couple of days of obviously arriving, and before pre-season had even... Oh, no, when pre-season had just started, he was in the same Pure gym that I was in. So I went and chatted to him, and he was doing... He was doing extra sessions outside of pre-season training.
That's what Majority used to do. I mean, for very different reasons. Like, he would be bodybuilding early morning, and then he'd come to training.
Yeah, yeah, because he couldn't do the gym he wanted to at the club.
Oh my God, what a psychopath!
Both but Stringer, I met him at BBC on Five Live.
How many anyone has not met Peter Stringer?
And he was in. So he's only tiny, but he's in phenomenal shape. And like you, if you ever watch his Instagram stuff, he does a lot of gym work. And he also said, when I was chatting to him, he said I kind of joked, oh, what are you up to this weekend? You having a Guinness or two? And he said, no, I don't drink. Which kind of shocked me.
The ultimate pro.
I have heard that he is one of the best professionals. Well, when he played, he was the best professional at sale. A cob did not pass his mouth.
That's impressive. I've got another contraption to add to my little menagerie of home gym equipment. I haven't managed to get a heavy kettlebell since last week, but I have got being delivered tomorrow a cycle trainer thing, so I don't have to go out on the road to ride my bike.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I know the things that you mean.
Yeah. So you
can plug your own bike into it, like a turbo trainer.
Turbo trainer, exactly that. So I've got one of them coming tomorrow.
Now, I think we should go back and talk a little bit about the Premiership clubs, because there's some interesting developments there.
Yeah, go on. What's happening?
Well, I just think it's worth talking a little bit about the flowing of players. So there's a few things about flowing which I didn't actually realise.
Flow, I like that. It almost sounds like falow, the flowing of players.
How do you say it?
Furlough.
Furlough.
I'm saying that as someone that had never heard the word before about 10 days ago.
Yeah, I have no idea what it means.
There are some words. Do you remember when, like last year, I'd never heard the word prorogue before, and then all you ever heard was the word prorogue?
Yeah.
And it was the same in like 2004 or 5 with like the word dossier. I'd never heard that before.
Yeah, and everyone's talking about dossiers.
Furlough's the latest one.
Yeah,
that's what I want to furlough, is the use of the word furlough.
So, I mean, I hope one of our very, very knowledgeable listeners can correct me on this. But as I understand it, there are players up and down the country at the moment, and they will take a salary cut, okay, fine, which is not what they should be doing. And then, if they have to, they might get furloughed. But they shouldn't be doing that, because I think, and again, you know, the masses of people will need to come back to me if I'm wrong. If you do that, you're opening yourself up to a contract renegotiation. They don't have to bring you back on the same contract, which is really worrying. So rugby players, basically, you know, by all means, look to take your pay cut. If you want to do it properly, make sure, well, you know, basically say you want your money later on, so to help cash flow. Don't take the pay cut. Just say pay me later, but do not take the furloughing, because it sounds like it's an absolute recipe for disaster.
Yeah, your average member of staff, in a 9-to-5 office job, doesn't. I don't think they have the choice about the furloughing, because it's otherwise the company might just say, well, we're making you redundant then.
Yes, exactly right.
I think that's the case. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people that have probably been sitting in a job for a long time hoping their company would offer them redundancy, and I don't know what the situation is there. But assuming you want to keep your job, if your company, I don't think you have a choice. But rugby players are slightly different, because they have a contract for a set period with set services that they're exchanging for a set amount.
Yes. So by furloughing, you're effectively saying, yeah, I appreciate that there's no more work. That's absolutely fine for me, but by accepting that, you're open to contract renegotiation, which could be very, very tricky for them if this game doesn't recover.
There's quite a good Rugby in the Law article on this. Okay. So if you ever want to know about the legal implications of Rugby in the Law at Twitter, or just online, is a very, very good place for stuff like this. And he's done multiple articles already on the Corona position. Now, that you've raised, Jay, is not one of the things that I've noticed from his articles, but I don't think it would be to do with the furlough position. I think it would be to do with the reduction in payment, because the reduction in payment is effectively the breach of contract. The clubs, if you reduce a payment for a player who is on a time-bound contract for a certain amount, X amount per month over that time-bound period, that is the breach from the clubs, which would, in theory, I guess, allow the players to come back from a renegotiated position.
Well, I'd be very...
Now, the furlough...
Yeah, sorry.
The furlough... Clubs can do the furlough and recover up to £2,500 per month of the players' wages from the government, but they could also continue to pay the players the full amount of their contract.
I'm certain that's what's happening.
It's just important to separate the two things. I don't think it's the furlough... which would lead to that breach of contract.
Accepting the furloughing, that means that they can renegotiate your contract, which is why you should not do it.
Why? Because you could furlough and still pay them the whole amount.
Because by accepting that you've been furloughed, this is as I understand. I won't comment on it anymore because I do not have the requisite knowledge. There is a legal mechanism which means that they don't have to take you back on that same amount. They can still make you redundant at the end of it. They can still pay. You know, there are still protections, but yeah, you are open to renegotiation. And the other thing I'd say as well about players is, if your club can't pay you right now, why not say you'll accept all of your money now, but instead of having cash, why not ask for equity? I mean, you've got them over a barrel. I would do that.
So I think...
What an amazing thing for a player to do. And to say, look, not only do you not need to pay me, so you know, we can build this club's so you can save the club, I'm also willing to invest my own money into it. So I'll be an equity holder and I'll be around for ages. I'm tied into the club then. What do you say? So all these clubs saying that they're going to go... And the clubs have got a problem as well, because all these clubs saying that, okay, look, you don't take the reduction, we're going to go into administration. So be it, because the players will be the first ones to get paid and all the clubs have got assets. And the owners can easily raise the money, because the government are buying up bonds left, right and centre. So they can easily do it, but they don't want to recapitalise after it's all done. So I would say, if I was a player, do not give an inch. Make sure you get your money. Or your equity.
Get in touch with JB. Professional rugby players, get in touch with JB for some advice on that one. What I would say on a more sort of day-to-day and functional level is, if you do accept a furloughed position, which I think, to go along with what Phil was saying, I think basically players would be doing that to help the club, because it would, the clubs would supplement that, so they're still getting paid what they would get paid. But it means the clubs can access up to £2,500 for every single member of staff or player in this case. The one consideration, if you do accept that situation, though, if you're a player, is...
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You cannot work. So I've looked into this, as you know, I have my own small business, and the only way I've lost a lot of money. We've lost a bunch of clients and a bunch of work can no longer happen. And I fall into one of the categories of people that doesn't have access to anything, because the only way I could get any sort of support to compensate for that is by furloughing myself. If I send one email, make one phone call, do anything whatsoever work-related, that invalidates that completely.
Yeah.
So rugby players, can they, like, technically, can they work out?
Well,
so this
is a debate that is on the Rugby in the Law, the latest article. And I think where they get to, which makes a lot of sense to me, is, so you cannot do anything that leads to paid work. So you can't, in my mind, train as a team
yes.
for that. But whether you're playing for Bath or Sale, or you want to work for a new contract or whatever, you've got to, as a professional rugby player, you've got to stay in shape. So yeah. You can be working, you can be training on your own. They can't stop you from training on your own. And I think that's where they got to.
To go back to Majati and Peter Stringer.
Yeah. And do you know what? Yeah. There's going to be certain characters and all this who are going to lose out. And it is, you know, there is an element of personal responsibility here, but it's very tough. I mean, I really struggle to work out on my own. I find it much, much easier to get into a group, go to a class, do something like that. If you lose your motivation and you're not very good at working out on your own, you know, you could come back in not great shape. And there might be other people who use this to enhance their career greatly.
Just think about Ben Tamifanua after the World Cup, who returned after like 2 weeks away, 2 weeks outside the Tonga squad, returned to Racing about 30 kilos overweight.
That's incredible. I mean, that's some real going, isn't it?
I mean, that is some real eating.
It's so hard not to go past the kitchen and just grab something at the minute. I don't know how he would cope.
Well, funny enough, one of the best things about the lockdown is the ability that I have now to control all the food in the house. And I find nothing more pleasurable than running down the food to the, like, you know, how much food have you got in your house which you've not eaten for bloody God?
I'm really enjoying getting to the back of the cupboards.
Oh, it's so good to see the back of the cupboards. So good. There is no waste. There is zero waste.
Yeah, I'm loving that aspect of it. Although, like I say, I'm a bit like a hobbit at the minute because the breakfast, second breakfast, 11s is lunch. It's like I'm going Roman. Just have one long food. I'm gonna have to start, you know, taking, you know, becoming slight. I don't know, just throwing it up like the Romans did, just so I can eat some more.
The vomitarium.
Vomitarium. Yeah. You know, you've made it, don't you? When you got a vomitarium.
I am the one thing I'm really bad at the moment is coffee. I'm having so many coffees.
Yeah.
Because normally I might a few times a week treat myself to a nice coffee when I'm at work. But when it's £3 or whatever from Cafe Nero, it's quite a good disincentive for me to do it. But now when I just wander down to my espresso machine.
Your Sage espresso machine.
Another cappuccino. Why not?
Why not? Yeah, my coffee machine's getting absolutely beating. I really want a filter coffee machine, though.
What coffee machine?
A filter coffee machine with one of those little thermos jugs. Because I like filter coffee, Phil.
Yeah, but why? We've had this conversation.
I don't believe you.
You want a woman in an apron with an American accent to just keep coming and topping you up?
Yeah, from the Midwest. Or actually, maybe one from down south that says y'all. Quite a lot,
but the bit I don't get is, so filter coffee is fine. I quite like filter coffee. I've got a few devices to make filter
coffee.
Very
good of you, Phil.
But they're so for a tenner you can get a Hario V60.
Yes, but for £260 I can get a beautiful looking Sage machine.
For £30 you can get a Keymix. Hario V60.
I want something like a massive industrial bun machine.
We need a spin-off pod, Coffee with the Boys.
Oh my God, some people take coffee too seriously. I just like filter coffee. And also I like the idea that it'll be on a timer and when I come down, it'll be ready to pour. Tell me that's not good. Go on, tell me.
That is the only advantage of paying.
Yeah, there's a massive advantage.
Paying 10 times the price, literally 10 times the price of what you could get for something that doesn't have that facility.
No. I will not name the individual, but I asked the opinion of someone who in the rugby world who loves their coffee and is very on the ball with their coffee. And I
said to someone them, very, very high up in somewhere.
I'm not going to say anything about who it was. It was someone I know in rugby. Anyway, so I said to them, I thought a nice coffee machine for Kate for Christmas would have been a good present. And I said, you know, I'd love to get a really good, like, really good coffee machine. And if I was going to be a bit extravagant and go get one of the bean to cup jobs, what would you recommend? And they recommended one, and I looked online, and it was £1,500.
Wow! Now I think
some people operate on different
They do.
On different levels, don't they?
The guy that I'm going to refer to, he knows exactly who he is. He was up in Manchester the other week. And he's got, it's almost like a psychotic obsession with coffee. Like, it's different level, different level. Like, cold brewing it so we can heat it back up overnight and all sorts of nonsense.
It's a good thing to get into.
Nice, is it?
Healthy habit.
I don't have a refined enough palate to know the difference.
It's a good point, that, because you came round to mine. God, it seems like a long time ago. Probably only about 2 months ago.
Yeah. So, oh, do you remember the days? Get the Hovis music on. Do you remember when you popped round for a coffee?
Well, Jay came round and I made him a nice double espresso.
So just, you know, Tim, this says a lot about how polite I am.
It was unbelievably polite. JB, I made him this nice double espresso, and JB had a little sip of it. And he said, oh, where did you get your beans from? And it was a place across the road from JB. So I said, oh, it's a barbecue coffee in Chorlton. He said, oh, their coffee's a bit bitter for me. I said, oh, that's weird. It's never normally bitter for me. Anyway, JB had a few more sips, and then a few more, and gets halfway through this double espresso and goes, you know what, this isn't right. Just taste that. And I tasted it. And so Claire had been descaling the coffee machine. So there was like industrial strength coffee cleaner, like, to descale the machine in the water. That JB had drunk half of this double espresso.
Brilliant.
I'm too polite. It's me to a fault.
Yeah, but what I like, there are some people that, and everyone knows someone, everyone works with someone who would have been like this, who would have pretended they were some coffee aficionado, sipped it and gone, oh yeah, really lovely. That's great, that. Yeah.
Lovely.
I was actually drinking it quickly so it'd be over and done with.
At least you noticed it wasn't quite right.
Yeah. Nice.
I'll tell you what, right. Someone who can afford a 1,500 quid Sage bean to cup coffee machine is Eddie Jones, who's signed a contract with England until the end of the 2023 World Cup.
Yeah.
Fine. Good.
So, England...
Like,
I'm happy. As an England fan, I'm very happy. I think he set out his ambition when he first got the job to turn them into the best team in the world, which they were clearly not under Stuart Lancaster. He got bloody close. I mean, their performance against New Zealand was absolutely spectacular in the semi-final. They got totally found out and undone by an incredibly dominant South Africa team. But I think I'm very, very happy with his overall record, with the way the team seems, with their overall trajectory. And very importantly, I don't know who else they would have got. Now, that's
damning with faint praise.
It's a bit of a negative side to it, but I'm really happy. Even if there were others available, I mean, I guess Steve Hansen is available now. You could go and get Steve Hansen or Scotty Robertson or someone like that. But
yeah, no one in the Premiership is really, and that I think is a really good point, Phil. No one has really stood out for me as the guy I want. I mean, Rob Baxter is always going to be mentioned, and he kind of deserves it, but it shouldn't just be because you deserve it. There's got to be a more compelling argument than you deserve it.
I'm not sure he would take it. Reading between the lines on what he said, I'm not sure he'd accept that job.
I don't know. When your country comes calling.
Yeah, it could be.
So you've got to make that decision. You don't know, I don't think.
Getting it too soon as well could be a poison chalice.
Yeah. So, but there's no coach out there who is like, yeah, who's clearly outthinking everyone else. Who's, you know, setting it. I mean, maybe someone like it's far too early. He's not even a head coach yet. What's his name? Vesti at Northampton seems to have a lot to add to the game. I'm not saying he should be head coach, but someone, you know, thinkers like that. Like, there's no Dave Rennie.
So yeah, I'm happy, and also we've said it before, but England backed themselves into a corner already. You've got to, in my mind, you've got to work in World Cup cycles, and he was already signed to 2021. Therefore, they had to either sack him straight after the last World Cup,
or extend
it. So, no, I'm happy.
But job number one, job number one is to put your arm around Joe Marler and get him on board.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Probably.
Definitely. Particularly when you think of Mako's injury record over the last few years.
Yeah. Talking to Joe Marler, coronavirus couldn't come at a better time for him. I mean, everyone seems to have forgotten, you know, his antics. He's got a little bit of time away from the game now. I assume he's going to come back and not be banned.
Honest answer, I've not looked into it. I don't know. You have seen it before where it's been weeks, and you have seen it before where it's been games. So it depends what was specified in the hearing.
Yeah. So, you know, he comes back, clean slate, enjoys his rugby again. You never know.
Here's hoping.
But when will he come back? This is a great question for me, because are we going to be able to see... So the RFU concluding the seasons for everyone only counts up to the championship.
So that, yes. Yes. So no noise.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen with the Premiership, with European rugby. There's a England tour to Japan. There's other summer tours that presumably are not going to happen now. Will we be in a position where we can start in September?
I'd even be amazed if we start in September, the way things are now.
It's so mad. It's a moving feast, and we don't know what the right and wrong thing to do. There's a lot of people who have the worst kind of hot takes, which changes all the time, and they manage to keep saying that they always felt the way they currently do now, despite changing constantly. But like, for example, Sweden are kind of on their own. In a few months' time, we'll either be saying that was total genius and they've look at the way they've navigated the course, or how stupid was that? Who knows?
Yeah, and Sweden. So Sweden are slightly unique based on what I've read, just from their kind of national tendencies, their culture and their tendencies. So they are, by their very culture, are fairly obedient and want to follow rules. So there's not lots of people willing to break it. They've been given strict social distancing, but some freedom within that.
Schools are still going.
Everyone's abiding by it. Yeah. That wouldn't necessarily work in England or US.
I think one of the reasons that the conditions are so strict is so it's almost to build in a tolerance. We know that we're going to cheat by 10%, but it's okay. We've kind of built in the tolerance for that anyway. What worries me is what's going to happen with social distancing and the pre-match R slaps. Is that going to go? Will we not be able to do that ever again?
Let's hope we've not seen our last R slap.
No, let's really hope not.
Really hope not. Before we get to the World Rugby law changes, just a real quick one. The Carlos Spencer trick shot.
Yes.
Let's not focus on the trick shot, because that's not what is important here.
Which a reverse pass into a basketball net, which is about 30 metres away. Yeah. Which looks like one of those fake videos. You know, the like NBA, pick me. When people did those fake ones of those. It looked fake. But it's genuine. Free.
The man is a god. The man is actually a god.
The shape he's in, though.
Yes, that is the point of the videos.
Yes.
Like, he should still be playing somewhere. I wouldn't be surprised if he is.
He should be.
Just ripped.
Yeah.
Was he 40-something, though?
Yeah, early 40s.
Yeah, he's an unbelievable specimen.
Unreal shape.
One of my favourite all-time players.
44, he is.
Is he? God, I hope I'm...
Wow.
Half the man that he is by 44.
So you've got Carlos Spencer, we've got Jamal Ford Robinson. Any other really good things you've seen? You've enjoyed?
The best thing about that is I don't even think Carlos Spencer is on Twitter, and it's going around Twitter.
Yeah, was it his son?
He must be in his son or someone.
Yeah, it's his son. Yeah. He's too busy working out.
I tell you what, imagine being Carlos Spencer's son. You're never going to be happy with yourself, are you?
No. Big shoes to fill.
Yeah, poor guy.
But has there been anything like on the other end of the scale, a bit rubbish from rugby players?
Oh, hang on a minute. Now you're really. I mean, undoubtedly yes. But again, give me more than 10 seconds to think about it. Yeah, I'm going to say yes, but I'm not going to qualify it with what. So yes.
Naming no names, there's some dodgy dancing videos going around.
Oh, yeah.
The dodgy dancing videos. And I think, God, we'd have to be in quarantine for a lot longer than we currently have been for you to get me doing some of those.
I'm also phenomenally bored of quizzes. Phenomenally bored of, and I'm phenomenally bored of emoji quizzes.
Oh yeah, I've had enough emoji quizzes.
There's a lot of emoji quizzes about.
Delete
for a lifetime.
For a lifetime.
I think one of the obviously, you know, not wanting to belittle the health of individuals and people who will lose their lives and whatnot. One of the awful legacies of this whole period is going to be the number of people that are on sites like TikTok and House Party, which are just dreadful.
Why? What's wrong with House Party?
House Party's all right.
House Party's good fun.
Oh, no, I've got rid of that. Because, well, I sort of put it on at one point, and there was a bunch of people kept adding, like people I knew were on there. And then I didn't realise that if it's on and someone wants to, they can just look through your camera, wherever you are, whatever you're doing.
What?
Really?
If you have it, if you're on it, then anyone can just
dial in.
Look at what you're doing. Dial in.
Oh, God.
JB's face.
JB's
I think,
face.
Mate, I wish I hadn't told JB now. That could have been fun.
Building a patio again. I think TikTok's been tremendous value. And I think I'm not actually on TikTok. I quite like some of the videos coming out there.
I can't tell what JB's doing, but it appears he's swatting a fly repeatedly.
Yes. No, I think TikTok's good. It's I've never used it. I've quite enjoyed the content.
Okay.
There are a lot of bad memes though.
And some good ones.
And some very good ones.
A lot of very bad ones. Tell you what, killing your wife banter has really made a huge resurgence. I mean, you know, it didn't used to be that cool to talk about, you know, locking your wife in a cupboard or burying her under a patio, but now it's all the rage.
We got sent a joke like that on email, actually. I'm going to open it up.
We didn't.
It was a picture of a meme which says, "Day 21 without rugby. I went onto my wife's side of the bed just so I could hear someone say, 'Roll away again.'"
That's not quite in the same category as ones I've been seeing.
No, it's not quite, but, you know. Right, let me move us on to
Hands
World
off,
Rugby.
Hands away!
let me move us on to World Rugby then, who have issued a clarification on the application of the breakdown laws, which come into effect in a couple of months' time.
There'll be any rugby.
So what exactly have they said, Phil? You know, you're down on these things.
So what they've done, which is something they've done in the past, is they're not actually changing the law as written. They've just issued a refreshed application guidelines to referee. And they've picked four areas or four of the laws for them to focus on. And I'll just go through these four because I think it's worth doing. Okay. So the first one, law 14.5, is the tackler. They must immediately release the ball and the ball carrier after both players go to ground and immediately move away from the tackled player.
Do you know what I think this is going to be most important for?
Go on.
It's going to be those semi choke tackles, you know, when the knee is on the floor, but the defensive player is still holding on to the player and buying himself a second or two of time. Because actually, when they hit the deck, it's not a big problem, is it?
Generally it's not, you're right. On our next pod, which we'll touch on, one of the things I noticed from 2007 was the amount of time that the tackle player was often cynically lying in front of the ball to slow the ball down. That's something that refs are hotter on these days.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, because the way they say it, as soon as the tackle's made and then releasing the ball, that to me screams of player's knee is down, the defensive player is holding him for 2-3 seconds while everyone around him is screaming, "Let go, let go, let go." And in that time, they've had time to reorganise. So that's what that sounds like to me.
So that's the first one. That's the law as written, but that's just one to focus on. The next one is so that's the tackler. The next one is the ball carrier, law 14.2.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, being brought to ground means that the ball carrier is lying, sitting, or has at least one knee on the ground, which is the bit that you've just referred to, Jake.
Yeah.
Or on another player who is on the ground. And then in line with 14.5, the tacklers must allow the tackled player to release or play the ball. The third one is the first arriving player, which is law 15.11, which is, once a ruck has formed, no player may handle the ball unless they were able to get their hands on the ball before the ruck formed and stay on their feet. And obviously, players must endeavour to remain on their feet throughout.
Why is that different to what we have?
It's not. This is just the. It's exactly the same laws. There's no amendment to the laws.
Incredible.
They're just the same laws. Sorry?
Incredible. We're reading the same laws.
They're underlining them, getting a highlighter pen out and going, don't forget, we made this law.
Yes. Absolutely essential work.
Basically, which is actually what they did with the high tackle laws a few years ago. There was no change in the high tackle laws, although there was at that point a change in the guidance for the application of the laws,
it's weird because we say there's no difference. There is a huge difference in practice.
Because it's the application. So in the past, in 2007 and 2003 and all those previous times, 2011, it was a red card offence to have a swinging arm high tackle or a high tackle shoulder to the head. It just wasn't applied very frequently at all.
Madness. Okay, so continue, Phil.
And the final one is other arriving players.
Okay.
So 15.5, an arriving player must be on their feet and join from behind their offside line. A player may join alongside, but not in front of that hindmost player, and possession may be won either by rucking or pushing the opposing team off the ball. So those are, what's interesting is those are the areas they've picked to focus on. And there's two areas of the law which they haven't chosen to do anything on, which are probably the two areas that in my mind are the most dangerous and the most contentious or need most clarification. And one of them is the crocodile rule.
Okay.
Which is not mentioned at all, other than the bit on the first arriving player, 15.12, which is players must endeavour to remain on their feet throughout. And the crocodile rule would be a twist to take someone off their feet.
Yeah.
So other than that, it's not mentioned. And the other one, which is a weird one that we pulled up a little while ago, is the shoulders above or in line with your hips position. That's not mentioned at all in this, which I think that feels like a missed trick because that...
Is this for Jacqueline?
For Jacqueline, yeah. So players attempting to steal the ball can't have their shoulders below their hips. Now, that is never enforced. If it's never enforced, why is it in the law book?
I've seen that enforced, though.
If it is in the law books, it should be enforced.
I mean, I must admit, I've seen it in 2000 with George Smith playing for Brumbies, but I have seen it enforced.
Yes, you've seen it once in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And pretty much every Jacqueline player. I mean, David Pocock, for example, you could go and look up 50 of his jackals. I imagine that 49 out of the 50...
I'm just thinking it through. If your hips are lower than your shoulders, and that, well, first of all, if there's a body in the way, you've kind of got to contort over that body anyway. But what end position are you in? So when you sort of come over the ball completely and you've got your head down, if you think like classic Sam Warburton style, you've got your head down, you're attached to that ball, is that safer or is it less safe than if you're basically in a very unstable position with the hands on the ball but your hands fully extended trying to rip the ball away? So I see that as quite
What I would say is if you're in that higher position that you talk about, as in if you're having to, there's only so far you can crouch and stay on your feet, and therefore you've got to, like you say, reach down with your arms. I would say that's far safer, in as much as that classic Sam Warburton, or Peter Armani does it brilliantly as well, where he hinges from the waist.
And yeah, goes, that's exactly what I'm thinking of.
Head right down.
Yeah.
The bit that's exposed is the head and the neck. And someone that's arriving, an attacking supporting player that's arriving at the ruck trying to clear that out, has to go for somewhere potentially dangerous.
So the way I look at it is, you're going to be in such an upright position, the target that you present to these players as they're coming towards you is going to be incredibly unpleasant when they hit you. And you are going to go back at a rate of knots. At least when you're in that Pietro Marni, very compacted position, you're very strong and you're sort of tense to take contact and you're hard to hit. When you're going to be more upright with your hands down, you're going to get hit very, very hard. And when you go backwards, you're almost certainly going to buckle knees and all sorts of other things.
So I actually think if your shoulders are above your hips, it means that your arms are fully extended, because that's the only, if the ball's on the floor, that's the only way. So you've actually got quite a long target that is very weak, that the attacking player who's trying to drive the defender off the ball, if you just hit the arms, fine. You drive straight through the arms and secure the ball.
Yeah, if you came in at a slight angle, I mean, I can see you getting hit so bloody hard. I mean, so incredibly hard.
But in the arm and chest, and I think the issue when
it's
your head...
It's not the arm I'm worried about. It's the legs. So if you think about when you get hit so hard that you're going backwards, back over yourself, that's where I see the danger for knees and ankles and whatnot. It's not as bad as spine and head, of course, but I still think it's going to be an issue. And I worry as well that I actually think the Jackal's becoming more important to the game. As handling becomes better and more plastic pitches are used, the only way to take it, think about back in the day, a 20-phase attacking play was almost unheard of. Now it's commonplace. You see it all the time. Exeter will do, two or three a game.
Because defences fan out and focus on the dominant hit.
Yeah, so actually, if you want to dislodge the ball now, or you want to win that ball back, and your jackling option has been taken away, your choke tackle has been taken away, what have you got left? And that's collisions, bigger and bigger collisions, working harder and harder and harder. And I'm not entirely sure it's the right way to go.
It might be that is an unintended consequence, because it might be that if you make the jackal less effective, teams just retain the ball for longer and longer. So you've got to look at other ways of disrupting and turning
over. And my solution to maybe mitigate that unintended consequence would be, well, look at anything that increases the ball in play time, quicker scrums, maybe less changes and replacements, to actually mean that you get the ball in play more, so that there's smaller players, so that even if they are trying to hit harder, that the actual people are smaller and it's not quite as explosive as it is currently.
Yeah.
Another way that they are trying to look at that is the 50-22 kick, which it's not been trialled officially yet, I don't believe, but it's going to be trialled in certain leagues.
That is from my halfway line into the opposition 22.
So or, if it bounces,
yeah,
it's got to bounce. I think it has got to bounce play and then go into the 22, go in touch in 22, and the attacking team gets the line out if that happens.
I could do that.
Which, because it's actually fairly easy to do if you've got a good kicker or a couple of good kickers, it means that the defensive team have to put, well, probably three players back, or at least two players back.
Imagine that. You've got Ford and Farrell in your team.
Yeah.
And you split them on either side of a ruck, or you pass one, or you move one to the 13 channel somewhere. That could be a nightmare.
And you've got, and if you had Slade and Daly as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it does mean that if anyone's playing against England and they've got those players on the pitch, they're going to have to drop three players back, which means that there's more space in your defensive line.
So I think I'm right in saying that in Australian club rugby, what they also trialled, I'm not sure whether this one's getting brought in at the same time, is inside your 22, a kick to beyond halfway that bounces into touch. You get the line out as well. Whether that one's coming in international level, I don't know, but I think in Australian club rugby, they trialled both.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
I'm not really a fan of it, to be honest.
I'd like to see it trialled. I'd like to see how it changes the game. I quite like the idea of speeding up the game, exactly as you said, Tim. I don't know what the best solution is, but speeding up the game so you've got a generally smaller, lighter players and more ball in play time.
I tend to like that. The 50-20 rather than the 22 past the 50.
Yeah, that way around as well.
Yeah, I feel that you're letting teams off the hook who are under pressure, whereas I think the 50-22 actually gets teams under pressure defensively. I don't like the idea that you just kick it out, and if you make it, you can then start playing from the opposition halfway. I also don't like the idea that if you've got a really savvy kicking game and you've pinned your opposition down, they can get out easy. I like the idea you can build the pressure and bully them a bit.
It's not easy to kick from in your 22 to after halfway with it bouncing in field and going out.
Speak for yourself.
Anyway, but yeah, we'll see what happens. I do think the shortest route from A to B on speeding up the game is speeding up is getting rid of the monstrosity that is scrums, resets, and maybe less replacements. But if this helps, that's all good.
I think the replacement thing is out the bag now. I'd like to see full on interchanges. That's what I'd like to see.
So then that does potentially lead to even bigger players. Because if...
No, just to be clear on that, I'm definitely not against bigger players as a spectacle. Not even slightly. In fact, more the merrier. I also like the idea that there's more tactical nous coming in from the coaches. I mean, the NRL thing is really interesting. NRL and Super League have interchanges. And you listen to an NRL coach talk and they'll say, you know, most points are scored towards the end of the game, not the start of the game. So why do I start my best players?
Yep.
And I love that thinking.
And I do like more tactical flexibility to give the coaches more to think about. I like that. It's just if you can have, like they do in rugby league, you have, say, four props, two on the bench and two starting. Each one can go for 20 minutes and then have 20 minutes rest and then do 20 minutes and 20 minutes rest. And
if you want to talk about that, opening up space, I mean, you're going to have players who are conditioned not to play a full game. But the reality of rugby is a lot of players have to play full games because things happen. So if you've got a guy who's only conditioned for 20 minutes, I don't think it's going to be quite that easy because you never know when you're going to need to do a full shift.
Yeah, because of injuries and everything else.
Yeah, one tight head goes down and you've got an utterly unsuitable guy playing for 80 minutes. Space everywhere. Yeah. Joyous.
Yeah.
Guys, well done. We've managed to do another podcast without resorting to picking our Lions team for 2021.
Oh, I've got my Lions 15 written down here.
well, you keep that up your sleeve. What I'm basically saying is, I think that is the equivalent of throwing in the towel as a content maker.
No. I am going to have to criticise ourselves here because we've done this. This is the equivalent of throwing in the towel is appealing to your listeners to ask them to tell you what they want to hear. No, I'm the expert. I will tell you what you want to hear.
Oh, we always get, because we've got such good insights. Nope. Wonderful listeners. It's great to get...
Done this for 5 years. I know what you like.
No. JB, we've had listeners come up with quizzes such as...
Quizzes is fine. Submit your quizzes.
US Eagle or porn star.
Yeah.
True. Which were outstanding.
They were outstanding. by all means, send in your quizzes. I'll be talking about what I want to talk about.
Send in your quizzes to contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Any other ideas? Like I say, help us avoid it's basically just accepting we've got nothing left. We're throwing the towel in. And you will see this. I'm not going to name any names about the networks and broadcasters or anything else that just when you get to the point that you go pick your Lions 15 for next year, that's it. You're saying we've got nothing left.
Yeah, unsubscribe. Unsubscribe.
Yeah, so we're going to try and stave that off for as long as we can.
Yes, definitely.
Help us. And subscribe. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter is where you can find us. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Acast, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, because we have another podcast coming in your feed. If you haven't watched Wales versus Fiji from the 2007 World Cup, then World Rugby have a video, full matched video on their YouTube channel. Watch that and get ready for the next podcast, which is coming in your stream very soon. JB, Phil.
Adios.
Top work. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.